Blog Talk Radio.
For radio as godless as our Constitution, tune in to Free Thought Radio.
Power to the people.
We'll explore the fascinating history of an agnostic feminist who helped give power to the people.
With Kimberly Hamlin, author of Free Thinker, Sex, Suffrage, and the Extraordinary Life of Helen Hamilton Gardner.
Coming up right after the United Nations Radio News and Brief.
This is the News and Brief from the United Nations. Children face violence and bullying at school all over the world, with one in every three students subject to attacks at least once a month, and one in ten a victim of cyberbullying, the UN said on Thursday. The warning from UNESCO, the UN Organization for Education, Science and Culture, based on 2019 data, coincides with the first International Day Against Violence and Bullying at School, including cyberbullying, on the 5th of November. In a statement, UNESCO Director General Audrey Azoulay described bullying as a blight that was neglected, minimized, or ignored, even though it inflicted physical and emotional suffering on millions of children around the world. We all have a part to play in stopping violence and bullying in schools, she said, as UNESCO reported that child victims are more than twice as likely to miss school as those who are not frequently bullied. Warning also that cyberbullying is on the rise, the UN organization attributed this to the COVID-19 pandemic. More students than ever were living, learning and socializing online, and this heightened youngsters' vulnerability to bullying and cyberbullying, UNESCO added. The UN's top aid official in Cameroon has condemned a spate of recent deadly attacks on schools there. In a statement, humanitarian coordinator Mathias Nab highlighted repeated assaults on children, teachers and educational facilities in the mainly Anglophone northwest and southwest regions of the country. They've been attributed to non-state armed groups who've called on residents to boycott schools in the two regions. These acts are abhorrent and unacceptable, said Mr. Nab, who insisted that education is a fundamental right and that children should not be prevented from going to school. It should be a place of safety and learning, not fear, he continued, before appealing for an end to the incitement of violence against schools. His comments follow Tuesday's attack on a school in Kumbo by armed men who kidnapped 11 teachers and staff. On Wednesday at Kulu Memorial College in Limbe, teachers and children were tortured and facilities were damaged, while 9 children were kidnapped on their way to school but later released in Fundong. On the 24th of October, 8 children were killed at Francisca International Bilingual Academy in Kumba, prompting UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres to call on all armed actors to refrain from attacking civilians and to respect international law. UN-appointed rights experts have called for the immediate release of a Saudi women's activist amid concerns over her worsening health, appealing directly to King Salman bin Abdulaziz Al Saud. Activist Lujan Al Hatoul has been refusing food since the 26th of October to protest against her prolonged detention. The situation is deeply alarming, the UN Women's Rights Committee said on Thursday, noting that the activist had addressed the forum in February 2018. 3 months after that meeting, she was arrested and has since been detained on national security grounds, partly based on her engagement with the Committee on the Elimination of Discrimination Against Women, it said, citing the charges against her. Before her arrest, Al Hatoul was involved in promoting women's rights in Saudi Arabia, with campaigns calling for women to be allowed to drive and an end to male guardianship. The committee said that Saudi Arabia had given assurances in February that Al-Hatoul's trial would take place in March. However, the hearing has been postponed several times. Human rights defenders have the right to communication with the UN, and they should do so free from fear of retribution of any sort, the experts said in a statement. Daniel Johnson, UN News.
This is Free Thought Radio with co-host Stan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below us. Above us.
Imagine all the people.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor. Welcome to Free Thought Radio. Hello, all you people. We the People. That's Power to the People, written by John Lennon, and that's very fitting for this election week in which we are seeing the will of the people. We don't know it right now as we're recording it, so it's just a suspended moment in time for us right now.
And I'm Dan Barker. I'm co-host with Annie Laurie Gaylor. This is the November 5th, 2020 edition of Free Thought Radio. Annie Laurie and I are again hosting from our Safer at Home studio in Madison, Wisconsin, while once again Buzz Kemper, the great voice deity, is engineering from Audio for the Arts, which is his recording studio real close to the Wisconsin State Capitol.
Free Thought Radio is, as always, the weekly production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. So you can tell from my name that we work to keep religion out of government, and our membership also happens to be free from religion. Whether you're an atheist, an agnostic, a skeptic, or you just don't even like labels, we all disbelieve in the same organized religion and deity, and we work for those two purposes at the Freedom From Religion Foundation. If you're a member, thank you, and if you're not, we would love to either send you information so you'll get better acquainted, our newspaper Free Thought Today, a brochure about our 40 plus years of activism, or you can just join up at ffrf.org.
And we have a great show today. During the second half, we're going to talk with the author and historian Kimberly A. Hamlin about her brand new book. It's called Free Thinker: Sex, Suffrage, and the Extraordinary Life of Helen Hamilton Gardner.
Yes, and I was so glad to hear about this book, Dan, because she's in my book, Women Without Superstition, but never read a bio of her. And she was the 19th and early 20th century feminist and suffragist. She was dubbed Ingersoll in Soprano when she was young, as an outspoken, eloquent freethinker. And she was present at the small signing ceremony for the 19th Amendment, guaranteeing the right to vote for all citizens, that included women, because she was hugely influential in lobbying for its passage.
And in a few minutes, we're going to talk with FFRF attorney Sam Grover about two state church cases for which we have written amicus briefs, one of which in Maine has resulted in a victory, a good victory, and the other in Pennsylvania, which has currently been argued before the U.S. Supreme Court.
So we'll talk to him in a minute.
And then we want to mention our TV show. Of course, we have a TV show that's weekly on Sundays. It's called Free Thought Matters. And this week we are talking with the artist and filmmaker Scott Burdick, whose paintings have been exhibited all over the world.
And Scott Burdick is a life member of FFRF, a beautiful artist. And during the show, which actually airs today on YouTube, so you don't have to wait to watch it if you're in one of the 12 cities that broadcast it. You can go to YouTube and look for our playlist, Free Thought Matters. We asked Scott Burdick about how he became an atheist.
I grew up Catholic in an immigrant neighborhood in Chicago, went to Catholic grade school that my mother had gone to and to the Catholic Jesuit high school. And it was during high school that I read really about a lot of different religions around the world. I read the whole Bible, I read the Quran, the Bhagavad Gita, the Book of Mormon. And that's when I realized that I didn't believe that these things were true, that they were all man-made. And just because I stopped believing didn't mean I wasn't interested. I'm still interested in talking to people wherever we go. We went to India last year. We've gone to paint the Maasai tribes and just really all kinds of countries. And I love reading their sacred books. And more, it's not about like trying to change their mind necessarily. It's about trying to understand why people believe what they believe.
And that is the artist, Scott Burdick, who's on Free Thought Matters.
And it's great to hear his voice, but you'll want to see the show. You'll want to see the paintings. It's lavishly illustrated with his paintings and seeing how he works. And also there's documentaries that he's done that are free thinking on separation of church and state, and we talk about those and show excerpts from those. So you can, if you live in Chicago, Denver, Houston, L.A., Madison, Minneapolis, New York City, Phoenix, Portland, Sacramento, Seattle, Washington, D.C., you can watch those shows Sunday mornings. and tell your friends about it. You can
on
go,
the TV. Yeah.
Go to fffrf.org news, and there's a drop-down for Free Thought Matters, and it will tell you the times and stations. Or just go to our YouTube channel now, and if you're an art connoisseur or a state church connoisseur or an atheist connoisseur, you'll enjoy this show.
So we're in the middle of an election week.
And as we started the show, this is being recorded on Thursday following the election, and we are all biting our nails. We think we know who's going to win the presidential election, but we're waiting for that information. And
but by the time you hear this show,
yeah,
you'll probably
you may
know.
Maybe we won't by next week, but we think so. And so we do maintain our faith in democracy, even though our membership is faithless. We believe in We the People. And the votes need to be counted, and they are counting them carefully, and we will soon know. And no matter who controls the White House, Congress, FFRF will pursue our agenda vital to democracy, to keep religion out of government, and to employ reason in our social policy.
Part of our work to educate the public about the views of nonbelievers are scholarships and winners of student essay contest. So, Annie Laurie, tell us about the Students of Color contest. We just announced the winners.
Yeah, we're a little late this year. The pandemic has slowed down our competitions, but we are proud to announce over $28,000 in scholarships going to a number of students of color who won our Students of Color David Hudak Memorial Students of Color Essay Competition. Students were asked to write about living and thriving without religion. We received 342 entries, and Dan, you can agree with me how wonderful they were. So we have an unusual number of ties, many, many top place winners. We have 10 major awards.
And even some of the non-winners were beautiful,
were,
all
yes,
the essays.
And we always offer them various things, including a student membership and things like that. So you can read the first top five winners, which is actually more than five people, in the upcoming November issue of Free Thought Today, and then we'll be running the next set of major winners in the December issue of Free Thought Today. Most impressive, and we're extremely gratified by the outpouring of submissions.
Then we have awarded $3,000, $1,000 each to three different students in the Yip Harburg Lyric Foundation Award, which was arranged by his son, Ernie Harburg. Yip Harburg, of course, you listeners know, was the songwriter and lyricist who wrote Over the Rainbow and Finian's Rainbow and Brother, Can You Spare a Dime? And It's Only a Paper Moon, famous lyricist. His son, Ernie, like his father, is committed to social justice and equality.
And also atheism, and we collaborated with the foundation in the past to print Rhymes for the Irreverent, which is a reprint of many of two volumes of his poems, but also many new poems that hadn't been published. These are Irreverent Light Verse by Yip Harburg, Rhymes for the Irreverent. And so he has been, Ernie has been giving money to give to students in the arts. And so we collaborated with Secular Student Alliance and have chosen three students to get this. And they're very interesting students. So one includes a Navajo Indian student who nearly lost his life. And has recovered and is helping other students. We have a Black Lives Matter supporter who is going to Rutgers. We have also, who is the third one, somebody who's was first in his family to go to college, majoring in photography at Rhode Island School of Design. You can find press releases about all of these essay winners and scholarships at fffrf.org. Slash news, so you can read more about them. Very deserving, and this is one of our most important campaigns, the future of free thought.
So, do we have Sam on the phone? Are you there, Sam?
Hello, I'm here.
Oh, great. Thanks for holding on with us. So, we invited you on to talk about two amicus briefs that FFRF has filed. The first one, let's talk about, was a good decision that came out of Maine, for which we wrote a brief. Tell us about what just happened in Maine.
Yeah, sure. So you're talking about actually the First Circuit Court of Appeals, which covers Maine, New Hampshire, Massachusetts, and Rhode Island. That Federal Court of Appeals recently decided that Maine's program, Maine has a program of paying private school tuition for students in communities without access to public high schools. And Maine's program excludes any private schools with religious programming. And that's Maine saying that they don't want their public tax dollars funding sectarian education. And the First Circuit Court of Appeals recently upheld that program, which is a big deal. The First Circuit cited a couple different decisions from the Supreme Court that came out that sort of drastically expanded what it means to have religious freedom and those rights, sort of morphing religious freedom from this protection of personal belief into a sword that can threaten the rights of others. So the First Circuit cited those decisions, Trinity Lutheran and Espinoza, and distinguished Maine's program, saying this isn't really about discriminating against religious people based on their beliefs. Rather, this is about not promoting religious teachings with public dollars. So the First Circuit came out the right way. We had filed an amicus brief in the case saying exactly that, and we're happy with the outcome there.
So the outcome, it's really a big win because it's in the face of these disastrous rulings by the U.S. Supreme Court in Trinity Lutheran and this summer, Espinoza. So we see a state constitution prevailing here in its protections against forcing taxpayers to subsidize religious education.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And so this is the First Circuit signaling to other federal courts of appeals that, yes, the Supreme Court is way out on a limb here, and there's still room within the law to distinguish those terrible decisions from reality, which is that we have a strong establishment clause in this country that allows states to say, we are not going to fund religious education.
I thought it was fun to know that there was kind of a celebrity who was part of the decision-making on this, and that is retired Supreme Court Justice David Souter sat on the case and joined with two others in favor of the state of Maine.
Yep, that's exactly right.
Now, we don't have very much time, but we do want to talk about this very momentous oral arguments yesterday in the case, the Fulton case. Could you briefly talk about that? We did an amicus brief. Lot's at stake on that.
Pennsylvania, right?
Yeah. So this is Fulton v. City of Philadelphia. And so basically this is a Catholic group challenging the City of Philadelphia's foster care program. The City of Philadelphia has contracted with a number of groups, including this Catholic group, for years to take care of foster children. But the Catholic group recently indicated that it would not accept foster parents that are in same-sex relationships. The City of Philadelphia said, you can't do that if you want to continue contracting with us. And the Catholic group sued. So we had filed an amicus brief in this case, basically arguing to try to protect the previous decision, Employment Division v. Smith, which is a really important Supreme Court precedent that basically says no one is above the law, right? Your religious beliefs don't trump neutral, generally applicable laws. And after hearing the oral arguments, we're now fairly certain that the Smith decision is not going to be overturned here.
Really?
But we
really?
Are not hopeful. It's hard to read the tea leaves, right?
Yes, it is.
There's a 6-3 conservative majority on the Supreme Court now, and they indicated in oral arguments that the conservative majority, that they are all in favor of granting the Catholic group some sort of relief here. So we don't anticipate a good outcome for the City of Philadelphia, but it's kind of hard to see how the conservative majority is going to get there. I don't think this is a case where they're going to overturn Smith. But just to give you a couple examples, Justice Alito was talking about, was asking during oral argument, didn't we say, the Supreme Court say in Obergefell, that there are honorable and respectable reasons to continue to oppose same-sex marriage, right? So that's sort of where he's at.
He's impossible.
Yeah, no, it's true. And so then on the other side, Justice Kagan is asking attorneys for the federal government who entered an appearance on in support of the Catholic group. Kagan asked the government, do you think there's a compelling state interest in eradicating discrimination against gays and lesbians? And the federal government hemmed and hawed and wouldn't really answer that question. So the federal government is siding with the Catholic group, saying basically, we think there's a difference here between discriminating against gay and lesbian couples and discriminating against, say, interracial couples, right?
Right.
So, but the city would have an interest in making sure the people it's contracting with aren't discriminating based on race, but maybe same-sex relationships are different.
So thank you, Sam. We are out of time. Yes, it is awful. And I think we're going to have to discuss this a little bit more. I'm a huge case. Even the Pope said civil unions are okay.
Sam Grove. Thank you, Sam. Sam Grover is an attorney with the Freedom From Religion Foundation. After the break, we're going to hear a song called We the People. And then after that, speaking of the vote, we'll talk with the historian Kimberly Hamlin about her new book, Freethinker: Sex, Suffrage, and the Extraordinary Life of Helen Hamilton Gardner. Stay tuned for more Free Thought Radio.
Hi, I'm Julia Sweeney, and I'm an atheist and former Catholic. I even wrote a play about it called Letting Go of God. Right now, Catholic bishops are using their considerable influence to deny women contraceptive rights. Please join the Freedom From Religion Foundation and help keep church and state separate. You can call 1-800-335-4021, that's 1-800-335-4021, or visit ffrf.org to stand up for true religious freedom.
Speaking freely, thinking freely. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
I'm Dan Barker, and we are in the middle of election week. And as this show is recorded, we don't know the final outcome of many of the races. But this is a time to think about democracy, about our rights, about our freedoms in a secular country, and especially in a country where we have the separation of church and state.
So this is Dan's tribute, his song, We the People.
The world, how true freedom rings. We wrote justice for all.
We fought a revolution. We took a stand to declare our independence from kings.
We will bow down to no master. We will kowtow to no king. We're a proud secular nation. We will let freedom ring.
That was We the People, complete, excuse me, with an atheist backup chorus. And the song is on FFRF's Friendly Atheist, Neighborhood Atheist CD. We have three CDs, musical CDs, available at the Freedom From Religion Foundation. You can go to FFRF.org/shop. You cannot have a social movement without music.
And, of course, we all now know that you can't have a true democracy unless everybody can vote and every vote counts. And, you know, it was just a century ago when women could not vote. And so We the People include all the citizens. And in our segment coming up, we're going to talk about that.
We're going to talk about somebody who helped make sure everybody had the right to vote, and that is Helen H. Gardner. And we will be talking with Kimberly Hamlin, author of the new book, Free Thinker: Sex, Suffrage, and the Extraordinary Life of Helen Hamilton Gardner. And this will be a nice respite, Dan, from the election evening that will continue and continue jitters. You know, we just don't know, as we're recording this, what's happening with the presidential race and with several others, major races. And so let's go back into history and learn about a remarkable heroine of history, somebody that I've always admired. I researched, but I am so pleased that there is now a full-length biography about Helen Gardner, Ingersoll and Soprano, and somebody who was right there to the end making sure that the 19th Amendment granting universal suffrage was signed into law in 1920.
I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. Stay tuned for more Free Thought Radio.
I believe in an America where the separation of church and state is absolute, where no religious body seeks to impose its will, directly or indirectly, upon the general populace.
Let's restore respect for America's secular roots. Help the Freedom From Religion Foundation defend the wall of separation between state and church. Join us at FFRF.org. Freedom depends on freethinkers. As Mark Twain said, faith is believing what you know ain't so. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
I'm Dan Barker. Welcome back. Kimberly A. Hamlin is a teacher of history and of American studies at Miami University of Ohio. She's a contributor to the Made by History series in the Washington Post. She's written some books. She's the author of the 2014 book called From Eve to Evolution: Darwin, Science, and Women's Rights in Gilded Age America.
Kimberly Hamlin's new book, just out this year, is a wonderful book called Free Thinker: Sex, Suffrage, and the Extraordinary Life of Helen Hamilton Gardner. And we have Kimberly Hamlin on the phone with us. Where are we speaking to you from Ohio?
Yes, I'm at home in Cincinnati today.
Well, thank you for joining us.
So, thank you so much for having me.
So, Kimberly, I mean, this is a wonderful book. I mean, this is right down our alley, of course. You know, Annie Laurie has studied a lot of the history of these women, but not in such depth. And I'm looking in your book toward the end here of some photographs of the signings of the bills to the Senate and to the House for the 19th Amendment, which women worked so hard for. And in the photograph, it's just a small signing ceremony. There's a small woman about 5 foot tall right next to the Speaker of the House, and in the other photo right next to the Vice President signing with a pin that she gave, Helen H. Gardner. So is it true that Helen H. Gardner was largely responsible for pushing through and lobbying to get that bill passed?
Yes. I often say that Helen Hamilton Gardner, or HHG as I call her, is the most interesting and most important suffragist that no one has ever heard of. Mm-hmm. So among her many contributions, she was the National American Woman Suffrage Association, the group known as NASA. She was their lead negotiator in Washington, D.C. Throughout all the 19-teens. They called her their diplomatic corps because she negotiated so successfully with members of Congress, including her next-door neighbor, the Speaker of the House. And she was able to charm her way into the Wilson White House and convince Woodrow Wilson to support the federal amendment as well. So her colleagues at NASA claimed that Gardner was, quote, the most potent factor in congressional passage of the 19th Amendment. And the reason she's at those signing ceremonies that you mentioned the pictures of is because she planned them. They're the first signing ceremonies of their kind in U.S. history. She
really?
Invited the press. She organized the party. She even bought the fancy gold pen.
And then she right away gave that to, was it the Smithsonian?
Exactly. She was a
press history.
Whiz. Yep. And she had a great eye for history, a great appreciation for the importance of stories, historical memory. So the reason she wanted to plan these signing ceremonies is to make sure the historical record documented them. So both through the media and also through what she hoped would be a landmark exhibit at the Smithsonian. She called it our nation's museum. She said our exhibit must be at the Smithsonian so that future generations could learn about the women's rights movement. So she donated the pen along with several other suffrage relics the very next week to the Smithsonian to get moving on this exhibit.
And I think you told me before we started the show that that exhibit was rather disappointing, but we did have some fantastic exhibits last year and this year at the Library of Congress, National Portrait Gallery, and the National Archives. And she's there.
Yes. So Gardner planned what she hoped would be this landmark exhibit for women's rights, and it turned out to be a small exhibit in the corner of the Smithsonian titled An Important Epic in American History. Even more disappointing, until 2019, 2020, the suffrage centennial, it remained pretty much the nation's only commemoration of the women's rights movement that culminated in the 19th Amendment.
Well, she was a real organizer and planner, and later I want to talk about her free thought background too. Maybe we can talk a little bit about how well she planned after her death what would happen, but well, that'll be a teaser. But she was not only very instrumental, of course, in suffrage and feminism, but she really got her start as a free thought activist. So let's talk about that. It's a fascinating story.
Yes, free thought is so important to understanding Gardner's trajectory. So I think that she first encountered the free thought movement through her eldest brother, who was named Bernard. He brought home Thomas Paine's Age of Reason, and their parents were very religious. Her dad was a Methodist minister. So Gardner remarked that her brother Bernard had to buy two copies of Thomas Paine's Age of Reason because their mother burned the first one. So she was introduced to free thought at an early age, but what really made free thought her home was meeting Robert Ingersoll. So
yes,
like many,
that would have been
so many,
momentous.
Yes.
Don't we all wish we could have met Robert Ingersoll?
I know. Exactly. So she meets Robert Ingersoll in the late 1870s, early 1880s, when so many, you know, thousands of other Americans got to meet him and hear him speak. And because Gardner was so charming and so interesting and wrote such irresistible letters, she wrote him out of the blue with some of her own writing, where she had started to write about religion from a woman's perspective. And Ingersoll immediately wrote her back and said, oh, your ideas must be heard in public. You must share these from the podium. So then he helped her organize her very first lecture tour and took her on as his one and only mentee. And that really solidified her place in the not just the free thought movement, but also in American public life. She was known as Ingersoll in Soprano because of his tutelage of her. He even traveled from his home in D.C., where he was living in the early 1880s, to New York City to introduce her first lecture.
And Kimberly, just in case we have listeners who don't know who Robert Ingersoll is, briefly, who was he?
Oh, Robert Ingersoll was the most popular speaker on the 19th century lecture circuit, bar none. So people would, more than 10,000 people at a time, would pay their good hard-earned money to go hear Ingersoll talk about rationalism, about secularism. He was known as the great agnostic. He rose to fame following his really motivating convention speech at the 1876 Republican National Convention that solidified his reputation as one of the nation's best orators. But Americans did not come by the thousands to hear him talk politics like he did at that convention. They came by the thousands to hear him talk about his rationalist worldview. Ingersoll's catchphrase was, "The time to be happy is now. The place to be happy is here. The way to be happy is by making others happy." And I think this message really resonated in the years following the Civil War, when people had suffered and lost so much, and they maybe were growing weary of, you know, hoping to be reunited with their deceased loved ones in the afterlife. And they really were open to hearing new ideas about the meaning of life on Earth.
You tell the story in your book about that first lecture, and I felt like reading your book, I was in the room. It was mostly men who showed up, I think, and they paid, what, 75
yes.
cents? And there's yes. this towering Robert Ingersoll on the stage, who was this revered and adored. He's the reason why people came. And then there's this little woman, and everybody's thinking, what's she going to say? And, boy, she really brought the house down. That was just a fascinating story.
So her lecture was called, this is 1884, to put it in time, it was called Men, Women, and Gods, and of course that later became the name of this beautiful volume, this book that she wrote with the same title, Men, Women, and Gods. And Kimberly, you know that I edited this anthology, Women Without
yeah.
Superstition, with about 50 women in it, but she was my favorite writer of all of the women freethinkers that,
oh, I didn't
know that I encountered. Well, her writing, it was so good, and
yes.
the book is so good, and there's this one line in it that I've used over and over again. I mean, it's still true today, where she said, "I do not know the needs of a god or of another world. I do know that women make shirts for 70 cents a dozen in this one." You know, when she talked, her humanity, when she talked about, as so many of these women freethinkers did, when they talk about this world and making this world better, quit thinking about some made-up afterlife. And then she is also, part of the book is very feminist and part of it is more philosophical. But could you talk a little bit about that book before we go for a break?
Yes, I would love to. So Men, Women, and Gods is the compilation of her first three free thought lectures. And what she does is can we talk about sex yet, or do you want to save that for after the break?
We can talk about that.
Okay.
Of course.
So
anytime.
What brings her to this point in her life is she had a sex scandal. Her birth name is Alice Chenoweth, and she was supporting herself as a young school teacher and principal in Ohio when she had an affair with a married man, the elected Ohio commissioner of schools, who was a man named Charles Smart, a married father of two. And news of their affair made it into the papers across the entire state of Ohio. So now she's a fallen woman.
Wow.
So she begins to ask questions like, why is a woman's virginity considered her most valuable asset? Why does no one care about a man's virginity? Why did she lose her job? Why was she run out of town when her affair partner kept his job, his family, you know, and carries on just fine? So these are the questions that start her intellectual journey and her real commitment to the free thought movement, because it's only in the free thought movement where she sees people asking questions about the purpose of marriage, about the roots of the sexual double standard. So Gardner comes to believe that the Bible is the root cause, not just of women's oppression and second-class status more broadly, but also of the sexual double standard. So after this affair, then after she gets outed in the papers, she spends several years reading, writing, thinking, reflecting. This is where she becomes, you know, a protege of Robert Ingersoll's. And then she moves to New York City in late 1883 and changes her name from Alice Chenoweth, the disgraced fallen woman of Ohio, into Helen Hamilton Gardner, Ingersoll in Soprano. So she emerges in public in January 1884, and she shares her ideas that the Bible is the root cause of woman's oppression. That's her main gist in Men, Women, and Gods. She goes
and
through
so true.
Each passage of the Bible that talks about the role of women. And she says, you know, a lot of the Bible is so foul, these biblical stories. She says, I can't even barely read them in public. You know, the rapes of daughters, the murder of wives. She said, it's going to soil your ears and my lips to say it. But this is where we learn about the sexual double standard. This is where we learn what men and women are like. And she says, this is wrong. We must discard these messages. And then she says, you know, I've talked to countless women who think the same thing as me, but they're afraid to say it. And she declares, I want to make it so these other women can speak. And that's precisely what she does. She wants
Very.
To be the one to say the bold ideas that other women are too afraid to say out loud.
Very stirring, and I love the fact that Ingersoll dubbed her Heathen Helen. We have to take a break
yes.
now. We are talking with Kimberly Hamlin, a professor and an author of the new book, Free Thinker, Sex, Suffrage, and the Extraordinary Life of Helen Hamilton Gardner. And you haven't heard the half of it yet. So stay tuned to learn more about this fascinating person.
I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. We'll be right back with more Free Thought Radio.
Hi, I'm Steve Pinker. In my book, Enlightenment Now, I show that the world has become a better place as reason has been overcoming superstition and tribalism. But the values of the Enlightenment are under attack. That's why I'm a proud member of the Freedom from Religion Foundation, the nation's largest association of free thinkers working to keep state and church separate. Please join me in supporting the Freedom from Religion Foundation to ensure that our government is driven not by religion, but by reason.
Margaret Sanger's motto was, "No gods, no masters." This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
I'm Dan Barker, and we're continuing our conversation with Kimberly A. Hamlin, the author of the wonderful new book out. It's called Free Thinkers, Sex, Suffrage, and the Extraordinary Life of Helen Hamilton Gardner.
And during the break, Kimberly, I was expressing my, I guess, embarrassment that I didn't know the sex scandal. I didn't know she was, quote unquote, a fallen woman, Helen Gardner. I didn't know why she had changed her name to Helen Gardner. And my sources, you know, that this was buried. And so your research is amazing. And it must be quite, must have been a surprise to you.
It was a big surprise, yes. So there's no reason for you to be embarrassed because Helen Hamilton Gardner kept the secret very well. No one knew in her lifetime or afterwards that she was a fallen woman. She told everyone that Charles Smart, the man that she had had the affair with, was her husband. So they moved to New York City together to restart, and she changed her name to Helen Hamilton Gardner and said, "Here's my husband." But what she didn't say, and maybe did not even know, was that Charles Smart never divorced his first wife. So she lived with him for 25 years as if they were married, but they never were married. And the reason that I was able to piece together this story is thanks to the digitization of small and local Ohio newspapers.
Oh.
So I worked with some librarians at the Cincinnati Public Library with expertise on, you know, these Ohio newspaper collections. And we searched and searched to find out, you know, what happened to her in Ohio? Why'd she move? When'd she meet him? And we believed at first, like everyone else, that she had married Charles Smart. And only through our searching did we see, oh my gosh, Alice Chenoweth was fired and run out of town for having an affair. Sure enough, it was there in the small Ohio newspapers that covered the scandal.
I guess I did know that she was born Alice Chenoweth. I just didn't know the reason for the pen name. I thought it was a pen name. And so this affair, which opened her eyes to the double standard and the biblical harm against women, also made her such a feminist as well as a free-thinking activist. And she did a lot of reform on this question of consent, women's girls' consent to marry.
Yes, that was where, honestly, I learned the most in my research. I had not, even though I'm a historian of women, I had not previously heard of the campaigns to raise the age of sexual consent. So this was where Gardner learned politics. In 1890, the age of sexual consent for girls was 12 or younger in 38 states. In Delaware, it was 7. So Gardner, isn't that impossible to even imagine? So Gardner, as herself a fallen woman, felt sympathy with all these other fallen women, even though she never came out publicly and said that she too had, you know, been a fallen woman. She took this on as her cause to change the way the public talked about fallen women, to change the public conversation around virginity, to garner empathy for fallen women. And she did this through her novels. She wrote two novels, one in 1890 and one in 1892, that told the story of a woman's loss of virginity from the woman's point of view, how women were coerced, what few choices women had. And she then urged public lawmakers to raise the age of consent in several states. So she moved to Boston in 1895 to edit this magazine called The Arena, and she turns The Arena basically into a single-issue publication with the goal of raising the age of sexual consent. And she and her colleagues in the Women's Christian Temperance Union, which made for strange bedfellows, obviously, because Gardner's a free thinker, but they did succeed in raising the age of sexual consent to at least 14 or 16. They were the only places where they were able to raise it all the way to 18, which was their goal, were the states in which women had at least partial suffrage. So Wyoming, Kansas, and Colorado. And this is where Gardner learned about lobbying. This is where she learned about politics. And this is where she realized that women really needed to vote, right? And not just the vote, but also ideally to hold office.
So we have talked about her absolutely essential role during World War One and thereafter as a negotiator, meeting many times with President Wilson to finally get him to get support, the 19th Amendment. But let's go back and talk about the free thought angle here, where she then, after meeting and being mentored by Robert Ingersoll, she then met Elizabeth Cady Stanton.
Yes. She became best friends with Elizabeth Cady Stanton in the 1890s until Stanton died in 1902. They met on the free thought lecture circuit, and then Stanton is the one who introduced Gardner to the suffrage movement. So Gardner never joined a suffrage association until 1910 when she moved to Washington, but she would occasionally go speak at suffrage meetings because Stanton invited her to. But like Stanton, she opposed the 1890 merger of the two rival suffrage groups, and she feared that that would mark the end of the radicalism of the movement. So she joined with Stanton in joining this kind of fringe protest group that Matilda Joslyn Gage started called the Women's National Liberal Union.
Mm-hmm.
Gardner and Stanton signed on with that. And then Gardner and Stanton also worked together to further Gardner's brain research. So Stanton had heard of Gardner's brain research, where Gardner took on a leading neurologist named William Hammond, who had claimed that women's brains were naturally inferior to men's in 19 distinct ways. And Gardner said, basically, that there's no way that's true. Your methods are biased. You haven't studied the brains of any educated women. Let me get you some educated women's brains to study. So she convinces Stanton to donate her brain to Cornell when she died. And the brain bequest form is, there's a picture of it in my book, and it's in the archives at Cornell, because Cornell had the nation's, even really the world's leading brain collection there, called the Burt Wilder Brain Collection. But when Stanton died in 1902, her children refused to fulfill this bequest. And they said, there's no way their mom, agreed with heathen Helen to donate her brain. So that left the question of who would be the first educated woman to have their brain studied by scientists.
And that answer was?
So that fell to Gardner. So Gardner died in 1925. And when she died in 1925, she was the highest ranking woman in federal government, the highest ranking woman there had ever been. She was appointed to the U.S. Civil Service Commission, overseeing nearly 700,000 federal employees. It was a rank just under that of cabinet secretary. So she had made front page headlines across the country for this high level appointment, and also because it symbolized that women were finally part of the nation's affairs as full citizens. So her brain bequest also became front page news because it was so unusual. And Gardner, you know, she hired two different lawyers. She did everything she could. She contacted the president of Cornell, all to make sure that her brain would go immediately from her body to Cornell to be studied. And the New York Times report on the scientific study of Gardner's brain, the headline says, "Woman's brain, not inferior to men's." And her brain remains in a jar at Cornell outside the psychology department, floating
in formaldehyde. And there's a picture of that. There's the picture of that in your book. Yeah. I'm sorry, yes. Kimberly, we're out of time here.
Well, I think we got the gist of it in, but you'll have to fill in all the details by reading Freethinker, Sex, Suffrage, and the Extraordinary Life of Helen Hamilton Gardner. And thank you for bringing her to life, Kimberly Hamlin, for so important to resuscitate her and everything that she's contributed to free thought and feminism.
Thank you so much for having me on and for this opportunity and for all you do.
Thank you for listening to, and thank you, Buzz, for engineering the show. And thank you, listeners in Philadelphia, in Madison, Wisconsin, listeners in Janesville, Wisconsin, to WADR, in College Station, Texas, in Columbia, Missouri, to KOPN, in Vermont and New Hampshire, to WOOL, Black Sheep Radio, and in Ithaca, where Cornell is, Ithaca and Watkins Glen, New York, WRFI. And all of you podcast listeners, of course, and you're all book readers, and this is a wonderful book for you to read. And if you do like our show, give us a thumbs up on your podcast provider and tell people to visit our website at ffrf.org/radio.
And this is a critical time to support the separation of church and state, secular government, and to make sure that religion does not interfere with our social policy, and it's doing a lot of that lately. So please join FFRF at ffrf.org and tune in next week for more rational radio and blasphemous broadcasting.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, ffrf.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.
I hope someday.